Welcome back. It is my great pleasure to be with Dr. Charles Raison, my friend Chuck, with Dr. Stuart Coffin, my friend Stuart. This business about that little voice in there when Pandora, this is a very ancient notion. That's about as old and Greek as one gets in terms of that mythology. This question of hope is right at the heart of how do you get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. You are very experienced with depression and
right.
things.
Yep.
This is deeply human, maybe life form, but certainly within the human experience. Yeah. Science isn't just you guys talking these big words. Science is also about life, and life includes how do you get up in the morning, and that gets me back to your question about hope,
yep.
which either is or is not algorithmic. But talk a little bit, four or five minutes.
Well, I would love to. I mean, if we could end with this, because I think this is the key. This, to me, is the key question, is that, you know, there's something about unknowability that feels sacred.
Unknowability?
Yeah, unknowability.
That feels sacred.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
the mystery.
That's in essence of, right,
this
exactly.
This is mysterious.
Uh-huh.
This is the mystic.
But mysteries, mysteries are double-edged swords, right? They can be extremely bad. Yeah, they can be causes of great non-hope if by hope one means sort of wanting to see a fulfillment of goals and things that are important to the self. And so there's a very dark side to an algorithmic world, which is, as you've written your book very eloquently said, you get facts, you don't get values. You know, there's this emptying out of the sense that there's something adheres to reality that's mysterious and beautiful, and it speaks to something. You know, where really at the end of the day, I think it speaks to this sort of sense that, you know, things are good and getting better. You know, that there's something positive you can hope for. And so, as I was thinking about your work and what the sort of points you articulate, the question is, if essentially consciousness is non-algorithmic and hence, by definition, unknowable, and if, in fact, the future is non-algorithmic and hence unknowable, why would we bias hope as opposed to despair from that proposition?
Chuck, that's just a wonderful question. So let me tell you a little story. Not that I have an answer. When I first came across this stuff about the fact that we can't pre-state Darwinian pre-adaptations, and in our daily lives also, in the evolution of the biosphere and the economy, I thought to myself, what am I going to do? And I felt bereft. This all took about a minute and a half. And I thought, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Then I thought, and this was the hopeful part. It actually is hopeful. I thought to myself, wait a minute, we've been doing it for 3.8 billion years. Somehow, we know how anyway. Okay, now I don't know what that means,
but yes.
Somehow we know how
right.
anyway. And then I thought to myself, I don't deduce my life, I live it. Okay? And then I say, rather hopefully to myself, we live our life with faith and courage, which in the Kantian sense is somehow sublime in the face of not knowing, or that sacredness that you talk about, or in this sense, mystery, because somehow it's the mandate of life. Does it prove yet that we're going to make it better? Not that I can see.
Yeah.
But maybe it does. Maybe it gives us the possibility of making it better. Okay? That these are our choices.
And you have both set me up so wonderfully, because for the last 10 or 12 years since first coming upon your work, when people will ask me something of that order, I'll say, well, let me tell you what I learned many years ago from theoretical biologist Stuart Coffman. All you can do is do your best, because you can never know the outcome.
Of course, that isn't grounds for hope.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
But it's grounds for getting up in the morning.
It is grounds for getting up in the morning. I think, there's something so deep in what you're saying. I believe, Chuck, that, and this is why I'm glad that you're in touch with the Tibetan Buddhists, I think we need to find some sense of the sacred across all of our secular and religious traditions. Mm-hmm. As a global civilization is of some form,
yeah.
either heterogeneous or homogeneous, is emerging before our fundamentalisms that we're retreating into kill us.
Yeah.
Now, a transcendent, omniscient, loving God certainly offers hope. I mean, that God loves you, and
right.
you're going to go to heaven, and it's going to be great. If God is, as I want to say, the creativity in the universe, which is partially lawless for the reasons mm-hmm. that we're just saying, because a law is a compact description of the regularities of a process, and we can't have it for these things. So we're faced with partial lawlessness. Then we got to find, if we could find a pathway to hope, that would help. I have one little piece, okay?
Yeah.
This sense of God is not a God who can love me back, because it's not an agent.
Yeah.
It is the creativity of nature. But Chuck, I can love this sense of God. I can have a sense of reverential membership in the entire unfolding of the biosphere that I and we partially co-create. And I actually, in the last year and a half, have been experiencing it. Now, love, Jesus told us, love thy neighbor. Well, how about love thy creative universe, including all the trees and the worms and the bushes, the bunnies, mm-hmm. and love it. Go out in the woods and experience it. And what I find is, I've said it, this new sense of membership, stewardship, knowing that we're stupid, awe, in something vastly bigger than me, in this co-creating biosphere, that's hope, because love itself is hope. You're the psychiatrist, but love itself carries hope.
Generative?
It's a generative hope.
So your argument, do we have time for this?
Until it runs out.
Okay. So you would say that algorithmic processes cannot engender that sense of mystery or sacredness. There's something built into the human mind that to have this sort of it's an affective experience and it's also an intellectual experience. It must be about things that cannot be completely described in with mathematics, which basically means that they're not fully lawful, and that things that fall under those domain become vitiated of that whatever it is that unknowableness. And that unknowableness itself does not mean that unknowableness, it could be God, it could be the devil. And really, I mean, if you don't know, you don't know, right?
You don't know.
But that there's something about that state that then at least opens the door for you to have an emotional experience, that there's something, you can choose to have hope, I suppose, right?
Yeah, there's sort of two different stances towards, I think, what you just said. Let's look at Spinoza. And Spinoza says, roughly speaking, God is reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it.
It's very similar.
No, it is very similar. Yeah. What I've come across is this idea that we really can't say that part of what happens, at least in the biosphere and up, is beyond natural law. So I find myself invited to think, let's identify the sense of God with the creativity in this partially beyond natural law, creativity in the universe, which therefore is non-algorithmic, but now, or non-lawful. But was Spinoza wrong? I mean, what about the part that does seem to be law-governed, like the way stars work and so
Absolutely.
On?
Absolutely.
Is there any reason we shouldn't find awe and respect and reverence for that? Well, there's no good reason that I can think of. I'm awed by that. And I'm even more awed by the staggering complexity of what's come about in the biosphere and human evolution and human culture and all of that. But I could get talked into Spinoza plus this lawlessness as well. That which is law-governed, describable, we can't change. It's deterministic if it's Newton, and if it's quantum, well, they're throws of the quantum dice. If it's us acting, we're co-creators of it.
And this is a conversation which we have co-created and would continue another day. Gentlemen, this has been fun. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, yeah.
Stuart Kaufman enlarges on ideas introduced here in his book, Reinventing the Sacred. We admire his audacity, his commitment to a new Eden, and all the ways Dr. Kaufman shares his challenging ideas with the world. We also are inspired by Charles Raison and look forward to following Dr. Raison's work at Emory University and with the Dalai Lama's Science Education Project for Tibetan Buddhist Monks. We sincerely thank both of them. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.